Hello, it's just Ezra here, but welcome to another episode of Concerning Climate. Today, we have Boaz Frankel. Well, Boaz, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, like introduce?
Sure. Well, I am a writer and filmmaker. I am a gardener. I did the Master Gardener program at Phipps here in Pittsburgh, the Conservatory and Botanic Garden. And I also started a gardening / plant sort of newsletter Substack called Root Bound. And so if people want to, you know, follow that, they can do that too.
Yeah. Can you tell us, can you tell us a little bit more about your blog?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's called Root Bound, and basically it is all about plants, it's about gardening, it's about projects I'm doing in my backyard, but also how humans and plants interact, sort of about culture and mm-hmm. history. Because, you know, plants, I feel like when people think about plants, they might think like, oh, there's sort of something to plant in your garden, but really, like, you're wearing plants, like your shirt's made out of plants. Right now you're like drinking plants. You know, you've got your birch beer in front of you.
Yes, it is
made of plants. It's made of birch beer, presumably. It's also made of sugar, which is a plant. This house we're sitting in is made of plants. It's made of, you know, trees. So everything is plants. So I think sort of, you know, as you can tell, I get excited about this stuff. Medicine is plants. So the Substack sort of talks about plants sort of in this big, through this sort of large lens. It's more than just gardening, but it's also sort of plants are everything.
More like diving into the ecosystem area of your blog, how can gardening help improve biodiversity?
Well, in huge ways. It's really, you know, there's this writer and scientist, Doug Tallamy, who is an entomologist. So he's sort of studied insects, but he also does a lot of stuff with plants now. And he has this idea called, what is it? It's called like the backyard national park or something like mm-hmm. that, basically, or homegrown national park maybe. But basically the thought is that there's so many wild spaces being, you know, developed into housing, you know, neighborhoods for housing or apartment buildings or business parks or who knows what, that basically it's on us now that, you know, if you still want butterflies and insects to, you know, visit Pittsburgh, then basically we have to turn all our yards together into this national park, essentially. And if we're all planting a variety of different native plants in our yards, then we can still keep all those insects' life that they support. So, you know, insects and wildlife and plant life and fungus, like, we only barely understand how all this stuff is connected. You know, I understand probably less than most. There are a lot of other experts out there, but everything is so closely linked. So, for instance, if you take, you know, a certain kind of butterfly or beetle, it's probably only evolved to eat one kind of plant, kind of native plant. And so if we don't have that native plant anymore, well, that insect, that butterfly, that moth, whatever, it doesn't have anything to eat, has no source, no source of food, right? But then on top of that, like this time of the year when birds are having their baby chicks, They don't eat bird feed this time of year. They eat really insects. They're looking for insects and little bugs to feed their chicks. And so if they're no longer, you know, the plants to support those moths that have those grubs that the birds need to get their, uh-huh. you know, baby fruits, it very quickly, sort of the biodiversity, you know, sort of affects everything.
It's so, like a little pyramid.
Yeah.
If you take away the bottom.
And we still only know, I feel like so oftentimes, you know, in Pittsburgh, you don't really think, or anywhere in the world, you'd be like, oh, you know what, let's forget about this area. Let's put this creek into a pipe instead and run it under a road. But then you don't realize that, like, oh, well, that water needs to go somewhere, and there's a whole ecosystem around that, and now it suddenly floods every time it rains in the street.
Right.
You know, and so everything is so closely connected, but certainly biodiversity is a huge part of it, which is, why I try to grow as many different native plants in our yard as possible and you know, I've noticed when we moved in, it was all grass all around our house. And so I ripped it all out, put in a ton of native plants, and now you see animals. You know, I see a ton of butterflies, I see moths, I see beetles, I see all sorts of birds, of course, rabbits, which are everywhere.
Oh, my God. The little baby ones are so cute.
Yeah, they're so cute. And, you know, chipmunks and squirrels and little voles and all sorts of stuff. And toads, dragonflies, you know, so it's like the more different plants you put in there. I dug a pond also, which is really attracts a lot of things as well, that you really see that it just sort of came to life with all those plants.
So I know a lot of people have a different take on this, but what is your definition of climate change and why is it important?
Never heard of that before. What? No, I'm just kidding.
climate change, never heard of it.
Climate change, well, it's the, you know, sort of on a global and regional level, a change in climate, which is, you know, caused by a number of things, but by a lot of those things are sort of things that humans are doing.
So you said you were a master gardener at Phipps Botanical Gardens. So what does that entail and what do you like do there?
So the Master Gardener program is something that exists, I think, all over the U.S. and different organizations do it differently in different cities. So Phipps does it here in town, and basically it's a year-long class. So I took a class for a year. We even had tests on various things, and you know, you go in 1 week and they'll teach you all about soil, or they'll teach you about plant propagation or botany, or you know, different aspects of landscape design and stuff like that. And then, you know, you take tests on it. And then as part of that, you also volunteer. So I volunteer every week at Phipps in the Fern and Stove Room. And sometimes I volunteer outside there, sort of planting or weeding and stuff like that. And then you have to keep doing it sort of every year. If you want to be a master gardener every year, you have to get more education hours and you have to get more volunteer hours. So, and then you're sort of a community resource also. So if people have questions, I don't know if this is too much information. For instance, your family's moving into a new house.
Right.
Spoiler alert. And your parents were like, hey, could you want to help with the yard? And I was like, I would love to. And that's, I feel like, part of what a master gardener does is you're, you know, I'm not a professional landscaper, but I have some information that I like to share with other people.
So if you had to give one piece of advice to all the people out there and me, because I suck at gardening, how to garden? Because I know that every time I put like a plant in the ground, it just withers away and dies.
Well, I think this isn't my advice, but I've heard other people say it, and I think they're right, is just plant something that you're excited about and interested in, because you need to be invested in it. I don't think anyone can't garden. I think you can do it, but I think you just maybe have to find the plant. If you love blueberries, then plant a blueberry bush, and then maybe you'll be really invested to do it. But but it could not even be food related. Like, if you like making your own clothes, you can grow like a plant that you can make natural dyes out of. You know? Like, trying to think, like, you can make dyes out of like coreopsis, which is this flower, this yellow flower. You can make dyes out of blackberries. I mean, anything basically that a fruit or vegetable that's ever stained your shirt, you could make dyes out of. So if that's like something you're interested, then plant things you can like make dyes with, or, you know, or anything. I mean, I think it's fun to grow edible flowers like nasturtiums and borage. And those are really easy to grow. But I think find like a way that it excites you. Or if you like a certain animal, like if there's a kind of butterfly, you could like look at a book and find this butterfly that looks awesome. Then you can find its host plant and then try to grow it and see if you can get it to come.
Yeah, so you mentioned like growing produce and stuff. So do you grow your own produce?
I sure do. We can look at that window. We can see what's happening.
So since you grow your own produce, can you tell us a little bit more about how that's more sustainable than just buying it from a store?
Sure. Well, sustainability, you know, is certainly a part of it, because if you're, you know, buying tomatoes, let's say at the store, well, obviously I can't be growing my own tomatoes all year round, really. But even this time of year, you know, they could be coming from anywhere in the country. They could be coming from another country. And so obviously, you know, if you're putting your tomatoes on a plane or a boat or a long, you know, truck ride or whatever, that's, you know, sort of a lot of mileage on a tomato versus taking it from the backyard.
Right.
But I think even more importantly, like, which tomato do you think will taste better? One that you picked like 15 minutes ago, or one that's been like sitting on a truck for 6 days?
Right.
Because honestly, a lot like you can grow so many tomatoes. If you look in a catalog, you can find hundreds of different tomato seeds. The ones you get in the store, they're just a few kinds they're selling in right. the store. And it's not because they taste the best. It's because they can sit on a truck the longest right. and not be totally gross looking. So the food that you can grow in your home is like way more delicious than the food you could get at the store, because the food at the store is bred that way to sit on trucks and right. because it'll last longer, not because it'll be the tastiest tomato or cucumber or whatever. Right.
They prioritize like getting it to a place and not being rotten than yeah. actually tasting good.
Exactly. So I think that's sort of the exciting thing. And just because there's so many choices, like you look in that seed catalog uh-huh. and you're like, there's 100 types of cucumbers, and they're like tiny little ones that are like shaped like grapes, and then they're like the huge ones, and they're all different colors. And it's like, you can't get that in the store. Like, yeah, right. the farmer's market, you can maybe get a couple of those, but here you have all these options, and it's uh-huh. so fun because every year you can eat like a whole new food that you never knew about.
Yeah, so in your blog, Earth Rootbound?
Rootbound.
Rootbound.
Yeah.
So you mentioned.
Maybe I'll rename it Earth yeah. Rootbound.
Earth Rootbound. you mentioned hell strips.
Yeah,
what are those? And why? What can you do to like make them better
sure.
and cooler?
Turn them into heaven strips.
Yeah, heaven strips.
Well, hell strips is just sort of a term for that piece of like. Sometimes it's green space, or maybe there are trees planted in there between the sidewalk and the road. So that uh-huh. little, that's sort of bordered in there, and oftentimes you'll just see there'll be like a low turf in there, a little grass, or there might be like a, you know, outside of our house, I see there's like a maple tree planted right. in the hell strip, and there's full of roots mostly.
Right.
And other people call them like parking strips or mm-hmm. sidewalk strips or whatever, but in my gardening class, we talked about them as hell strips. And they call them hell strips because it's really inhospitable there, because it's super hot. It's sort of surrounded by
concrete.
And so it's just like radiating heat. There's usually it doesn't keep a lot of moisture in there. So mm-hmm. things have to be really drought tolerant. In addition to that, of course, dogs are like right. peeing on there all the time. and then in the winter, it's like covered in snow, and it's probably getting like salt all over it.
Right.
When people are like putting salt in the road or on the sidewalk, it's all getting there. So it's a super inhospitable environment.
Right.
And so we call that a hell strip because it's hard to get things to grow there. But certainly, if you think about it and you put an effort, you can grow all sorts of native things. So I'm trying right now. I've planted different goldenrod, which is sort of this yellow flower, which attracts a lot of pollinators and flowers in the fall. I planted some in there. I planted different grasses and sedges, which is a sedge, something that sort of looks a lot like a grass.
A hedge and a sedge.
Yeah, hedge and a sedge. It's confusing. There's a rhyme that how to remember what a sedge is. If you look at like the leaf of the sedge, it says sedges have edges, and I think and grasses have nodes or something like that. I forget how the rest of that rhyme goes, but clearly it's not that right. that helpful. But anyways, there are things you can plant in there, and it'll take a little bit of experimentation, but it'll be great because to have another opportunity, because not only can you fill it with some flowering plants, but it'll also be supporting wildlife and stuff like that in that little area. And in certain cases, you'll see places where they sort of dig out that hell strip and turn it into like a bioswale, where if there's like a lot of water that collects in that area, then it'll be a place where the water can sit, and there'll be like sort of plants that can survive in those wet conditions.
Okay, yeah. So you mentioned Yinzer Backstage Pass.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I mentioned it.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned it in our email earlier.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is correct. Have you done anything like nature or like gardening or climate change based in your Yinzer Backstage Pass?
Well, it hasn't, not quite, but we just filmed some this week that are related. So Yinzer Backstage Pass is this little video series I do for Next Pittsburgh, and every week we go sort of behind the scenes of something like Pittsburgh-y. So for instance, we'll like, we checked out the Clemente Bridge and saw the construction work they were doing
right.
out there. We'll go, like behind the scenes of the chocolate milk factory or something. but what we filmed a couple things this week. One of them was at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden.
Ooh,
have okay. you been out there? I'd never been out there.
Not Phipps?
Not Phipps.
Not Phipps.
It's this other thing called the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden. It's only been around, I think it opened in 2012 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy because up until the 60s, it was a mine, a strip mine. And so it is, and the crazy thing about mines is after you do that, there's always all this, like, when water collects down there and water seeps out of it, it's this super, I forget whether it's really acidic or basic, but it's basically this, just, there's always toxic liquid leaching out of it.
Out of the mine.
And there will be
right.
for centuries after the mine's being, after the mine's been closed. This right. mine's been closed forever. And so it's crazy that not only are they building this garden, but they also have to figure out a way
to make it not, like, die yeah. of acidity.
And to, like, to re... So they have all this, like, complicated system where the water comes through the mine and then it sort of goes into this area where it mm. sits, and so it can be, like, settled out, essentially. But it's, like, crazy because not only do they have to do this garden, they also have to constantly be battling this, like, mine remediation. But it's very cool. So I was just out there, and there, and it's a big... project that they're it's only been open since 2012, but they're adding a little bit every year, so it's very cool. So that's sort of a something that's more sustainable. And then I also was just at the roof of the convention center downtown, where they have a giant monarch garden, like, to support oh. monarch butterflies, and they have all, they're growing all this produce on the roof of the convention center.
Oh, that's so cool.
The corn is, like, 5 feet tall. It's, like, so cool.
Oh, that's,
they have,
really
like,
cool.
all these
yeah.
corn stalks. They have all these trees up there, a lot of native plants. They have, like, an herb garden. They're growing. They're, they have all these different little raised beds with all these plants in it. So it's so cool. So those were two that are sort of gardening mm-hmm. and plant and sustainability specific that I did recently.
So... kind of in a little tangent, mm-hmm. can you, like, walk us through your garden verbally,
Gosh, sure.
obviously?
Yeah, should we walk over to the
yeah.
window so I can see it?
Yes.
Okay, so first, the front and side yard is all native plants,
right.
pretty much. So in the front, I've got all these oak leaf hydrangeas and this fothergilla and all sorts of ironweed. And now we're looking at the backyard. The backyard is sort of inspired by, like, a cottage garden,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty much, it's mostly all native plants. So you see these, those purplish, pinkish things are
yeah.
all this wild bergamot, which you can also eat. It tastes, maybe I'll give you some after this, but it tastes sort of, like, thymy. It tastes a little bit like Earl Grey tea also.
Oh, cool.
And then we've got this echinacea growing. You have this prairie blazing star, which are these cool rods of purple flowers. Back there, there's eastern blue star, which is done,
mm-hmm.
Blooming for the season, and false indigo. And there's wild quinine and penstemon, and intermixed out some herbs. So there's
right.
some lavender over there, and rosemary, and rhubarb over there. There's a bunch. There's some butterfly milkweed.
Ooh, nice.
It's great for the butterflies. There's, I've got some borage in between, which is another herb. You can eat the flowers. There's some black-eyed Susan. And then here's the veggie patch. So we've got mm-hmm. tomatoes over here. We've got snap peas, which is coming to the end of their season. There's the first time I've grown corn. You can sort of see
oh,
it
yeah.
down here, which I'm doing in this. There's, like, this indigenous planting called, like, Three Sisters, where you grow corn together with squash and pole beans. And so they all sort of, like, support each other.
Oh, that's
because
cool.
the pole beans grow up the corn,
right.
and then the pole beans also, like, add nitrogen to the soil. They sort of fix nitrogen in
oh.
the soil, which supports the squash and the corn. And then the squash sort of, like, creates a ground cover, so it helps keeps moisture in the soil because
uh-huh.
it sort of grows around everything. And they're all plants that are native to the Americas.
Right.
So it's sort of cool. And they're, yeah, so I tried that this year. I've got some potatoes growing over there. There's some strawberry over there. I've got a little... these mini watermelons I'm trying for the first time, these mini cucumbers, and then I've got some zucchini over there and some garlic. I think that's most, that covers it.
Yeah.
And some different herbs in between.
You're making me jealous.
Well, we can go outside
yeah.
after this. I can, you can eat some edible flowers.
Yeah. So what is your favorite plant of here?
Gosh, I, like, always have a different one. I'll tell you, I'll actually tell you, I dug a pond. It's hard to see because all the plants are so tall right now.
Oh yeah.
But a year ago. And so the pond plants are, like, really exciting to me. Because this is something I couldn't grow before. And I have a water lily, which bloomed last week, which was super exciting to see.
Oh yeah.
I had a little, like, white flower in the pond. So I think right now that's sort of my favorite. That's, like, you know, plant of the month.
Mm-hmm. Plant of the month.
Yeah.
You have, like, a little poster that says plant of the month.
Yeah, a little gold plaque we put up. So who knows? Any of these plants, if they do a good job, they could be
yeah.
plant of the month next month.
Okay, well, that concludes our interview.
Gosh, well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks so much. For, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching.
And
remember to follow us on our Instagram at Concerning Climate Podcast.
And remember to do good things for the environment.
See you soon.
Bye.